Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 14, Dads. When I've asked people what topics they would like covered in my podcast, one of the answers I've received is an episode on dads. Indeed, it's a popular topic that often crops up at Matex workshops. What about the dads? I am conscious as I begin this episode that dads are a very specific category of partner. We know that relationships happen in many forms, and women may have a same-sex partner or indeed no partner at all. Talking about dads today in no way negates the importance of discussing those women, and I will approach them in a separate episode in the future. But I do think that there are some specific things about dads and male partners that are worth addressing and discussing. So that's what I'm hoping to do today. Dads and fathers have been increasingly present at birth since about the 1970s. Prior to that, birth was very much a female occupation, female preserve. Women often with female relatives or friends or mothers, really women being present in the birthing room. And men were introduced, as I said, in the 1970s. They started to be there, an expectation that they would be there as a birth partner to support the woman. And we need to consider really how much have we prepared them for this. When I see men after the birth in the postnatal period or on the postnatal ward, or even during another pregnancy, talking about previous birth experiences, men frequently talk about feeling completely helpless, witnessing their partner being in pain, feeling unable to do anything about it, and also unable to protect them from intervention. In fact, dads' classes were set up at the hospital I work in as a response to our first Whose Shoes maternity experience workshop at Kingston. We worked with a local organisation, Dads to Be, and introduced this one-off 90-minute class run by a father and a midwife, aiming to equip dads with a bit of knowledge that would help them in the first few days and weeks of fatherhood. I know that this isn't offered by all maternity units, and I once found a charming young dad wandering through our education centre looking for the class. He'd just had a baby. He didn't know the hospital. He'd come from another area. He'd sought out the class as a few days into having a baby, he suddenly realised that he didn't know what he was doing and that he needed to equip himself with some knowledge and understanding to be best able to help his partner. Technology has given men an occupation. We used to have dads tracking contractions with paper and pen. Now they come in proudly and show an app of frequency, duration, and strength of contractions. They often chart labour with enormous dedication, every event, minute by minute detail. And they'll come into our triage and show us what's going on. It's very sweet. It's very touching. To be honest, we don't need to know that level of detail, but it gives them an occupation. It gives them something to invest their time and energy in at a time when they're really not sure what's happening. And it makes them feel they're doing something to help. Some come and set up playlists and bring large bags of snacks and play very active roles in their partner's birth experience. Some sit quite subdued in the corner, even sometimes watching sport on television or on their phone. Some totally invested, some seemingly disinterested, some controlling, and many scared. Many scared of the responsibility, scared of the outcome, scared because they're witnessing their partner go through birth. Women who are using gas and air or have perhaps had pethidine may forget things and may forget things in that rush of oxytocin when the baby arrives. Often it's the men who can remember every detail and are sometimes traumatized by what they've witnessed, unlike the women who seem to forget. Often when I see people at a postnatal appointment, it's a little disconcerting. I often recognise the dad more than their partner. The partner may have been very pale from anemia or very puffy and swollen from blood pressure problems. She often looks very different when she's no longer pregnant. And it can feel a bit strange that when I walk into the waiting room, it's the man I recognise, even though it's the woman that's my patient. In labour, we're used to caring for the men too. It's not uncommon to have men faint, either in the operating theatre or in the birthing room. Sometimes the toughest looking, hard men, the colour drains from their faces, we can see it coming, and we get them fast onto the floor with their legs in the air, get them a cold drink or a towel. They're very shaky and embarrassed. If we can, we get them out of the theatre. We reassure them it's nothing we haven't seen before. It happens all the time. Usually we can preempt it a little bit. Try and make sure during labour that they're eating and drinking and getting some rest. Caring for them is part of caring for the woman. Occasionally something more serious happens and we need to scoop them up and send them to A&E. The pain of kidney stones is often compared to childbirth. In fact, pethidine is used to relieve that pain and is also a common pain relief in labour. I've seen a dad on delivery suite on more than one occasion with renal colic, kidney stones, while their wife is in labour. So we pack them off to A&E, get them investigated, treated, and most of the time they can come back and join us. But we need to make sure we're looking after them properly too. And we don't always have the skills and experience to deal with whatever problem they're having. And we don't want looking after them to distract from the care we need to give the woman and the baby. A dad's rite of passage becomes quite task orientated. Cutting the cord at delivery, putting on the first nappy, taking photographs. Often men are so fearful of holding their own baby. How many have ever held a baby before? Some of them haven't. And one of the other things is sometimes announcing the sex of the baby. So an increasing number of couples will find out the sex of the baby in advance, but some still wait for a surprise. And often those parents, there's been a plan that the dad will announce to the woman what the sex of the baby is. The only problem is that in the heat of the moment, they make mistakes. They might announce, "It's a boy," and we might need to quickly correct, "Actually, it's a girl." And although you'd think it's very obvious, it happens surprisingly often. So now sometimes when we know that's the plan, we'll say, "That's great. You can tell her what it is, but we will correct you if it's wrong." Tears we see a lot, tears of relief, tears of joy. And sometimes I witness the most intimate moments of a couple when I'm stitching, when I'm suturing. Sounds completely daft, but it's almost as if I become invisible. I'm stitching between the woman's legs as they admire their baby. And the rush of emotions and the stress of the birth is over and past. And there's a moment of calm. And they start to talk about who the baby looks like, count the toes, what about the hair, gently exploring and discovering their baby together, whispering to one another, perhaps trying out names. It's like being under a spell. I love those tiny moments of pure delight, as if to say, look what we made together. And that's fantastic, and that's a privilege to witness. Over time, fathers have helped me push the boundaries too. So when a woman comes into theatre for a cesarean section, she's normally under a spinal anaesthetic, and her partner is there to support the woman as a birth partner. So with a general anaesthetic, we usually don't have the partner there. And a general anaesthetic may be done in an absolute emergency when there's a risk to the life of the mother or the baby, and therefore we need to get baby out very quickly. And in that situation, it's very difficult to have a partner there. But for some women with very specific conditions, so problems with blood clotting or low platelets, or women who've had previous spinal surgery, a general anaesthetic may be the only option for their cesarean section. And I've had dads of women with these problems say, why should my baby be born in a room full of strangers? For a planned cesarean, why couldn't I be there to witness, and at least one parent to meet their baby straight off? So I have done this, and you have to be very conscious of anaesthetic risks and issues and make sure the anaesthetic team are happy with this. And in general, what I've done is explain to the dad ahead of time exactly what the woman is going to look like with a tube down her throat, ventilating her, how she will look, what to expect when he comes into theatre. And the way we've done it is keeping the dad outside the door. The anaesthetist will put the mum off to sleep, and we normally drape and clean and have everything ready before she goes to sleep, so that we're ready to start the cesarean as soon as possible, so that the baby has the minimal amount of time of a general anaesthetic. And then when we start the surgery, so as soon as we make the incision, the midwife will come in with the father, and the father will sit by the resuscitator, the machine we use for keeping the baby warm. And normally it's 5 or 10 minutes from when we start the cesarean to when the baby comes out. So that's plenty of time for the dad to be in. And then he can see the baby as soon as it's born and hold the baby and perhaps give the baby skin to skin while the woman is unconscious, having the rest of her surgery and also waking up in recovery. So certain fathers have helped me push the boundaries of that and make sure that at least one of the parents is there, present, conscious at the birth of their baby. In an emergency situation, a woman might be whipped off to theatre. Perhaps she's having a hemorrhage, a bleed, after the birth of the baby. And the dad will be left with the baby. And we used to have dads complaining about being left alone, feeling very helpless, with nothing to think but the worst, and a small baby with them that they have no idea how to look after. So we've learnt from that, and we now allocate a support worker or midwife to sit with them, support them, help them, feedback and tell them how things are going, give a message to them as soon as we've got a woman stable in theatre. So dads have become a much more integrated part of the care we provide. Things have changed a lot during my career, with fathers now being able to stay in hospital with their partners, having open visiting, and having dads to support women both postnatally and on the antenatal ward too when they're in early labour. We also have far more men coming and attending antenatal appointments and ultrasound scans. But the situation is that not all relationships are rosy. Not all fathers are good fathers. We know that domestic violence is increasingly common in pregnancy. Women have a 1 in 4 lifetime risk of domestic violence, and we know that pregnancy is a particular trigger point. Sadly, homicide features as a cause of coincidental maternal death, with the rate of homicide being killed by your partner being higher during pregnancy and immediately postnatal than expected for the background population of women. So for this reason, we're duty bound to ask women about domestic violence. And this is increasingly difficult when fathers' involvement in pregnancy and birth is increasing. We need to try and see a woman alone at various points in pregnancy. We need to ask her directly about domestic violence. We need to ask her if she feels safe at home. We need to give her the opportunity to talk. We've had over the years fathers that have had affairs, fathers that have left their pregnant wives, relationships breaking up, and on multiple occasions I've had women disclose domestic violence to me. Sometimes only when I've seen them on multiple occasions do they feel it's safe enough, that I've gained their trust enough for them to tell me what's really going on at home. It's not really surprising that the stress and anxiety about becoming a father and the responsibilities and commitment that that requires can result in physical and verbal aggression. And this can happen not only to women, but to the staff. Fathers can feel frustrated and excluded. And sometimes if we have a woman with 2 birth partners, she'll have her mother and the father. And that can be potentially a difficult combination anytime, having a mother-in-law and father, let alone under the stress of labour. So not infrequently at handover, we'll hear about a father kicking off, being difficult, being aggressive to staff. But hardly ever do we need to use security. It's usually much more a case of taking them out of the room, listening to their concerns, acknowledging, hearing what they're saying, reassuring, and calming the situation down. It's very difficult for men to admit some of their feelings. I've heard fathers talk about the cultural expectations that they'll be strong, that they'll be able to handle things, they'll be able to support their partner and their baby, and that they won't display emotion. And it's only recently that there's been recognition that actually partners' mental health is important to prioritise in pregnancy and the first year of life, because these men are supporting the women. It's even more difficult for men if they have a critically ill wife. They might have a baby in intensive care. They might even have their wife or partner in one hospital and their baby transferred to another hospital. Or they may have other children at home to support. This is a life-changing event, a very stressful and challenging time. So for today's zesty bit, what I want to say is we're building a family. We're supporting that family, not just the woman, the pregnant woman. For many interventions that are needed for a safe pregnancy, actually talking about family behaviours and the family unit is much more important. For example, there's no point a woman giving up smoking if her partner continues to smoke. And that's why there's a lot of focus on smoke-free pregnancy rather than what the woman herself is doing. Advice on good healthy diet might be another obvious thing to tackle as a unit, as well as mental health and coping mechanisms about becoming a new parent. During COVID, it's been particularly challenging. I know some maternity units have excluded partners, and certainly we don't have other relatives visiting in the way that we used to because of the importance of minimising footfall in a hospital. So we need to consider fathers' roles and support fathers as well as mothers. So there are lots of different examples of dad's antenatal classes or dad's antenatal education or postnatal information. And I've put a link to one of them, DadPad, which is an initiative that I've come across, in the programme notes. So we have a responsibility to try and equip dads in the best possible way with the right information to be able to support their partner and play an active role in the creation of their family and this major life event. If you're a pregnant woman, think about what has your partner done to prepare for the birth of the baby and what can you do together. And do ask the professionals looking after you what they have set up to help dads, particularly first-time dads, with that role. As professionals, whilst this preparation of the couple is really important, alongside this, need to balance the fact that the primary focus for us is the woman, the care of the woman and her safety. And we do need to make sure that whilst we increase the involvement of fathers and increase the support we offer them, that we are careful to see women on their own at least some of the time and give them the opportunity to tell us whether things are all right at home. So I do hope you've enjoyed listening to the OBS Pod. If you have, do like, subscribe or leave a review and join me again to explore more about the life of an NHS obstetrician. I'm finding it really exciting to have people listening and give me feedback about what they've found interesting. So please do recommend the OBS Pod to other friends, colleagues, or people who you think might find it interesting. I'd love it if you'd share with me what you've enjoyed about listening and if you've done anything differently as a result. I can be found on Twitter at FW Maternity and at the OBS Pod. And please do check the MatExp hashtag, hashtag MATEXP, and the website matexp.org.uk for more information and ideas on how to improve women's experience of maternity care. Finally, I'd like to reassure you that I take confidentiality very seriously, and although I'm talking about experiences from my working life, I'm taking great pains to make sure that I anonymise the stories and talk in more general terms so that I keep confidentiality of my women I currently care for and have cared for in the past, very safe. Many thanks for listening.